Hi, I'm Tim Hernandez. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. In fall of 2018, my fourth year of living in El Paso, I had learned of the Tornillo Children's Detention Facility and found myself heartbroken over the idea that immigrant children were caught up in the system and being held at this facility by the thousands. I looked it up and learned right away about the many local organizations that were raising awareness about this situation and protesting at the gates, but one man in particular caught my curiosity, a man named Joshua Rubin. I don't know what it was exactly about Joshua. Perhaps it was the way he slept alone in an RV there at the gates, defying threats to leave. It's one thing to have this kind of resolve in groups, but another to do this work in solitude. I went there to meet him, and I took my children that day. Joshua was there with a protest sign that read, "Free the Children." I was deeply impacted by his mission to bear witness. I left with my kids that day. I went home, and I began this poem. My children live here with me. Their mother lives in California. They miss her. This poem is incapable of carrying them to her. It's not a vehicle. Today is now December 4th, 2018, and they cannot touch their mother. Not even with a poem. You think they haven't tried? Last night, my son climbed into bed with me. We cuddled, and I rested my mouth against the back of his head, inhaling him deeply. In that short contact between his scent and my nose, I could not help but wonder how distance from his mother will eventually shape him. Time away will change his DNA. In 2 weeks, the children will both fly to California to visit her. My children are qualified to travel alone. Days ago, I took them both to Tornillo. There, we met a man named Joshua Rubin, a software developer from Brooklyn. He's been posted at the gates bearing witness for months now. I explained to my children what this meant, bearing witness. But why, Dad? Because someone who wasn't there will tell the story and get it wrong. Joshua knows this. He's taken months off of work to be there, morning to night. He misses his wife. Their longing is nothing compared. One day, these tents will come down, and this land will return to what it was. We cannot forget the children who cried out, the names of their mothers and fathers. From the silent desolation of this desert, who lost their breath while standing in line an eternity, waiting to become qualified. And with that, our guest today is Joshua Rubin, a software developer from Brooklyn, New York, the founder of Witness at the Border. He was a witness at Tornillo, Texas Influx Detention Facility for migrant children and a similar shelter in Homestead, Florida. These facilities held over 3,000 children at their peak, both no longer do. Joshua Rubin, welcome to Words on a Wire, my friend.
Thanks, Tim. Good to be here.
It is. It's good to see you again. You're back in El Paso, continuing the wonderful, important work that you've been doing for the years that I've known you. Before we get into the many questions I have for you and listening to what you've got going on these days, I want to actually just remind our listeners that this is the pandemic version of Words on a Wire. So we're not in our KTEP studios as we normally would be. We're actually recording. I'm here based in my home here in El Paso. I'm recording here and Josh is based in our, well, right now you're recording at your hotel here in El Paso. Is that right, Josh?
That's right. Yep. I'm right here in town, downtown.
But you're originally from Brooklyn, New York.
That's where I live, Brooklyn, New York. And that's where I've been hiding out from the pandemic. I guess we've all been hiding out. That's my hideout.
Yeah, I guess we have in some way. That's true. The first time you and I met was, actually, this is the second time I've had you on our show. I want to remind our listeners of that because the first time we met was in around fall of 2018. I invited you onto the show, onto Words on a Wire to talk about your work around the Tornillo, what I'll call the Tornillo Children's Detention Center for lack of the official language around that. Here we are catching up with you. Tell us why you're back in El Paso.
Well, the tragic irony, I guess, is that I'm back here in El Paso because in El Paso, again, is a site of where we're keeping children. Mm-hmm. And these children are now the consequences of the current policy that forbids asylum for adults, but allows it for children. And as a result, parents are making the horrible, fateful choice of sending their kids over. Some of them held as families and then decide they're going to send their kids over And so we have what the government likes to call unaccompanied minors, which I like to call children. And we have them at Fort Bliss, at a place where they're being kept kind of remotely. We really can't see them. We don't know where they are, really. You know how big Fort Bliss is. It's as big as some states, it seems. And they have capacity there for 5,000 kids. We know that they have somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000. And we're here to draw a line. I came here with a bunch of people who continue to work with me. We call ourselves Witness at the Border now.
Right.
And they came here, and what we decided to do on the phone, because again, we were in the pandemic, but we started trying to think of what we could do now that a lot of us are vaccinated. I'm vaccinated. I hope you are.
Yeah.
Well, we decided that we needed to draw the line because people weren't seeing the connection between this policy that we have at the border.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're children away again in a place like Fort Bliss.
Right.
So we have a schedule for Friday, what we call a walk for the children or caminata por la niñez. We're taking a walk from the Paso del Norte Bridge. We're walking all the way to a gate of Fort Bliss, the Pershing Gate. Draw the connection.
I should interject here just briefly that by the time this airs, that will have already taken place. It would be on Friday. This airs on Sunday, but I know that the message behind that reaches and stretches far beyond any single day. You know, I know that the work you're invested in here, because I've seen you before, lasts longer than just the walk itself, which is why I felt it important to have you on our program, because I know that on Dia del Niño you guys will be doing the walk, which is Friday, April 30th, but this won't air till a couple of days after. That said, there's many ways that folks can find out how to support and work with you all still online and through other means. I'm gonna pause here for a second, because I wanna get to that towards the latter part of our conversation. We don't have much time, but I want our listeners who are not familiar with you to be reminded of the work that you, what brought you out here to Tornillo and the El Paso area in the first place. If you don't mind sort of backtracking a little bit, taking us back to early 2018 when you, when you first were prompted to come out here. Tell us how that happened.
Well, it came from a kind of a desperation, a not knowing what to do when faced with the horror of what I was experiencing sitting in my room, my apartment in Brooklyn, and looking at the news and hearing about child separation, family separating, and that horrible thing that was going on at the border, and seeing pictures of the borderlands in the Rio Grande Valley and here, and having earlier in my life been down here and spent time in Texas, kind of vagabonding around and working on a shrimp boat, I was seeing scenes that I'd seen before, and it made me feel as though I could just get up out of my chair and I could come down to the valley and I could do something. And so I went to McAllen with a sign that said freedom, and I got arrested and I moved around to other places, and there were demonstrations. And then somebody mentioned this place called Tornillo. It was in the news. It was tents. There were boys in the tents. I went there. I didn't know what I was seeing there. I went home. I came back again. And I was sitting in a room. I was sitting in a room full of people. We had this weekend of action, sort of.
Right.
And people we were doing this kind of a postmortem. And somebody said, I'm tired of people coming down here and doing something for a day and thinking they'd actually accomplish something. And I felt she was talking about me. I'm sure she was. And I thought to myself, well, what could I do if I came back down? And I could not come up with a single thing except I could come down and I could be somewhere. And the place that I was going to be, I decided, was outside the gates of Tornillo. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did for her.
And now, when did you start? When did you first come up and take that post there outside the gates of Tornillo? And for how long?
Right. It was about 3 months. I believe it was October of 2018 that I started it. Time is a funny thing, doing a vigil like that. So I have this very, very vague notion of it. In fact, you know, I went out to Tornillo yesterday just to see it again, you know, where I'd spent 3 months living there outside at the gates. Right. And I wrote up a reflection of my day yesterday, my experience yesterday. If you have time, I'll read it to you if you'd like.
Please, right now. Yes, absolutely. We're a literary show. We love anything that you have to read with us and share. Please.
No, let me read it to you then. I went to Tornillo yesterday. I had spent well-remembered time outside the gates of what was then a prison camp for what we called unaccompanied minors, better thought of as migrant children. I was there forever, or for 3 months. It was 1,000 years ago, or 3 years. The wind was blowing yesterday, and the cotton had not yet sprouted, so the fields were in dry clumps. I parked at the open area beside the gate to the port of entry, an open gate, with nary a guard. I got out of my rented car to decide where to tread again in a place where my feet had at one time or another trod before nearly everywhere. There are no tents, no voices of soccer-playing children on the wind. The children are not being kept here now. They're at a place a little way down I-10 at Fort Bliss, the massive military base. Somewhere on its endless acres, there are tents, and there are children, and there are sounds of children, braver during the day than at night, in their cots, and in chronic uncertainty. No guard came to ask me my business at this Border Patrol station and bridge to the other side of the river, to the other side of the world, where I would cross 1,000 years ago, where I still knew the way.
Lovely, lovely. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Words on a Wire, and we are speaking with our guest today, Mr. Joshua Rubin, who is actually the subject of a documentary that recently came out called Witness at Tornillo. And he's been posted up at not just the Tornillo Detention Center when it was here back in 2018, but also at various detention sites across the country. And we're speaking with him just about his journey. He's back in El Paso today, preparing for a walk that's taking place this weekend. Although by the time this program airs, it'll have taken place, but his work continues beyond that. So Joshua, you know, so yes, you were staying out there at Tornillo for 3 months. That's when I actually met you, because your action spurred myself to consider what was I doing as well. You know, that's the power of the witness, you know, seeing someone just standing there caring for 3 months repeatedly. And I had heard about this man standing there with a sign in front of the gates of this detention center. And I took my kids out there and I met you. I didn't know what I was going to see out there, but, you know, and then we continued to return out there and hold signs and bear witness with you various times. And I know a lot of the community did. And it finally, after several months, I remember there was some speculation, and I know you had most of the insight, as far as I could see anyway, as to the possibility of Tornillo finally shutting down. I remember feeling very optimistic, but yet cautiously optimistic, because I wasn't sure that would actually happen, probably like what a lot of us felt. How did the news first come to you that, how did it strike you when you first learned that Tornillo was actually going to be shut down, partly in due to the efforts of yourself and other protesters here in the El Paso community who spent much time out there, and organizations who spent much time? You know, when you first learned that that the likelihood of it shutting down was coming, how did that make you feel, and how did that happen?
Well, first, I have to say that at the time that I actually arrived there, they were talking about it shutting down. But at the same time, trucks were going in and new tents were being set up. So there was always talk about it being shut down. It was always in the air, but I was standing at the entrance and I could see, obviously, more people were coming in. And bathrooms were coming in, and trailers were coming in. It was going in the opposite direction. So somewhere in the course of the time that I spent there, the idea of it shutting down started to seem more possible. And one of the reasons it came to me was that it was getting the kind of attention that is the kind of attention places like this don't want to have. Right. Politicians were showing up. More protesters were showing up. And it started to seem as though people were finding ways to say bad things about the place, to say that this shouldn't be going on, that this is a strange thing to be happening here.
Yeah.
We found out that it really was going to shut, I think, when I really started to believe it. I believed it was possible all along. I don't exactly know why, because some of these other places don't seem possible at all to shut down. Right. And I'll go there anyway, and I'll try and shut them down. But I don't know how they're going to get shut down. But this place, we learned finally. I think that the guy who was running the place inside really didn't like what he was doing. Mm. And word got out about that. He really was very uncomfortable with what he was doing. Wow. And at the time, he was being prevented from doing what this place is supposed to do, which is supposed to take some kids, make a bunch of phone calls, and place them with family, which is what's supposed to be going on now. And predictably enough, it's exactly what people are having trouble doing. Right. Because we have a bureaucracy that's built not to do that. It's a broad bureaucracy that caters to private companies that actually make a lot of money when kids stay there, not when they go home.
Right.
They go home later with the trauma of an experience that they'll live with for the rest of their lives.
Right.
And these companies will go home with the money that they made, by winning these contracts, which they invested in. They invested in campaigns of politicians who, when the time came, hired them to do this, and right. so that they could rake in the money. How did I feel? I felt, I kind of felt it was kind of like an out of body experience, really. The fact that this place was going to close, and it left me with that hollow, empty, and somewhat joyous feeling, all of those at the same time, that you get when your life is going to change radically, even for a good reason.
Right.
What was I going to do now?
Right.
I had changed my life to make a single purpose. I was out there. You were there, Tim. I was out there in these cotton fields, the mountains in the distance, the wind blowing constantly, a chronic cough from the dust that it carried. I walked around. I had disputes and conflicts with the guards and with the police and everybody who was trying to get me to move away from there. My entire existence was defined as this thing that I was doing. So what happened? I left finally, with the help of my wife who, pulled me out of there and I drove home and I got home and I thought, well, what am I going to do with my life? And then I started getting phone calls about this place in Florida called Homestead, which was another place just like this, except the phone call said, you got to go there because it's worse.
Right.
And now, the story goes on and it carries us all the way to the present. But what happens is I find myself in these places where I'm lost in this in this single purpose world, somehow to bring attention to what's going on, somehow to get people to look at it in a different way. Finally, to look at migration as a human right and not as something that every once in a while we allow somebody to do.
Yeah.
And that's my purpose now.
Right, right. And I know I'm familiar with your journey. I know that after Tornillo, you went to Homestead and were there for quite some time as well. It didn't seem to be, of course, by my limited knowledge, it didn't seem to be as successful a situation as Tornillo turned out. But where does Homestead stand now? Where does the situation there stand now in Florida?
Well, Homestead took longer. Shut down, but we actually did shut it down.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Good.
Yeah, we did shut it down. Finally, there were enough excuses for some of the politicians to support us, and we got the support that we needed, and we had a stroke of luck. The presidential candidates had their first debate in Miami, the Democratic candidates, and we collaborated with some people who got these candidates on record saying, of course, I'll go to Homestead and see the kids. and they came out and they came out and they spoke and they stood on step ladders with me. And one of those people standing on step ladder with me was Kamala Harris, saying that if she ever got elected president, which as we know, didn't work out the way she wanted, she would shut down any for-profit detention for children. She would shut down a place like this. this kind of place would never open. And in a few weeks, it did actually close. We started hearing there's no hurricane plan. What happens if a hurricane is there? We started hearing this is near a toxic waste site, and it was all this was true. But we started hearing it in press, and it shut down. We shut Homestead, and even a few weeks ago, there was talk about opening Homestead again. There's actually still talk about it now, but I think that we've basically poisoned the water, speaking of toxic waste, and that Homestead is not a place that's going to open. Unfortunately, there are plenty of other places that they can open, and one of them is Fort Bliss, which is what brings me to town this time.
Right. You know, and one of the things, I mean, as a literary-minded person, as a writer myself, and I know you also, not just somebody who's a writer, you know, and who loves to journal yourself. I know that about you, you know, but also a musician who appreciates a good lyric as well. I know that. I know those things about you as well. But, you know, I can't help but when you continue to part of the power of when you were witnessing was always, at least for my assessment, was always that you also chronicled what you were witnessing and made it public through your social media, Facebook page, and through other outlets. And a lot of folks continue to follow that. You were bearing witness for those of us who, for some folks who couldn't be there. And I have to say, though, that what really captivated me was the very kind of the poetic aspect of your experience, because you know you were writing about your interactions, very intimate, seemingly intimate interactions with even some of the guards, the people that were guards there, the people that were working in there, inside Tornillo, the exchanges even that you had just through almost sign language with the children who were there. You know, you were on the other side of the fence, they would kick soccer balls over, all these images that were beautiful and also tragic at the same time, kept making their way into your writing as you were posting these bits of information. In fact, so much so that later on, after knowing you, after you had left El Paso in late 2018 or early 2019, you know, it prompted me to write a poem, which I actually read at the beginning, at the introduction of this, before I was going to interview you. You know, it inspired a long poem because there is so much, I think, just in your objective chronicling of the situation. You know, it was poetry and it was documentary all at once. And I mean, there's no question in that. I just want to say how powerful that was, you know, and continues to be in your journey and what you're doing. But there was something else that came of that, and that's the documentary that you were highlighted in, not just yourself, but also those of you who all worked to shut down Tornillo. Tell me a little bit, with the few minutes we have left, tell me a little bit about what that experience was like and how people can access that documentary.
Well, I'll start with the second part of your question there. You can access it by going to Carbon Trace. A search for Carbon Trace will get you to a film company, and it's available for viewing there. So you'll be able to see it then online, stream it online.
And the official title of that documentary?
It's Witness at Tornillo.
Right.
And it was an interesting experience because, you know, filmmakers who come to a place like that are also going to experience it very, very personally. And back to your description of my description, I think what I realized I had to do in terms of this witnessing is I had to describe what was happening to me while I was doing this, because otherwise I would sound like a reporter, which I really didn't want to sound like. And I think one of the more profound things that happened is the change that takes place in somebody who is willing to take a look at what's going on without, you know, an intervening screen like we have to live with now, I'm afraid. But without an intervening screen, we have an experience that that makes a kind of a magic in the world. We start to see deeper. We start to see things that aren't just there, but are hanging in the air somehow, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And the figures fill out, and I start seeing further and further back. So what happened with the filmmakers? Well, you know, they did feature me. They kind of centered on me and said, you know, here's this guy talking about his experience, which is what it was. I, you know, at the time I thought, this is a little embarrassing, I have to say. This is a little embarrassing because I don't want this to be about me. But it's not true. I do want it to be about me, but about this part of me, the part of me that says, you should go out there and you should experience this without mediation. And then you should chronicle what happens to you as well as what happens to the world.
Right, right. And that's absolutely what I gather. I think that's what made the documentary so important. I got to attend the one of the premieres for it that was held here at the University of Texas in El Paso, where I teach as well. And you know, it seemed like a very well received documentary, and important to spread the message and the word, and not just in its time as it's happening, but also, you know, in years from now, once in a new era, that documentary will still be, I think, important and vital, unfortunately. But you know, at the same time, we need to see what it means to bear witness and the sacrifices that go into that, not just for one person, but also for a community, you know, for an immediate community, a local community, and then by extension, even the national community, you know, what's at stake and the kind of sacrifices it requires to do this kind of work, you know, which I'm really grateful for, you know, and for knowing you just as a friend. You know, I'm very grateful for your work and your influence. And I'm pretty much just, you know, I was excited to have you back on the show, Joshua, and to talk about this. One of the things for those of us, because we're shutting down now, I mean, we're about closing here. And one of the things I want is for our listeners out there, how are they able to access, you know, I know that you have an events page of some kind, I think, that's on a website. How can they get more information looking forward, and how do they know where to participate?
Here's a couple of ways. One is witnessattheborder.org. It's a website. It has reporting about deportation flights, and it also has witness reflections that I write on a regular basis. Another way to find out is to join the Facebook page, Witness at the Border. It's a group page. There's news there every day. There are events there, and my writings also appear there. And so do other witnesses' writings appear there. So that's the way to get it. And by the way, I'm very happy to be in El Paso, where almost everybody's a witness at the border. That's part of being back here.
And we hope that maybe you'll put all of these writings that you've been doing for quite some time now into a book. Is that coming up? A book that we could all go out and buy?
I often hear that being suggested, but I think I kind of like the ephemeral nature of what I write. I like the fact that it floats away in time. But there is a way to get it back, I'm told. So maybe I'll consider that sometime. Thank you for your encouragement.
Oh, absolutely. I think you should. I think it'd be a powerful documentation of what you've been doing and the work that needs to be done in the world. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, my friend.
Thank you, Tim. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely. And good luck. Good luck with all that you're doing in this pursuit. And we'll continue to support and to, keep track of what you're doing out there. Thank you, Joshua.
Thanks, Tim. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Support for local production of Words on a Wire on KTEP comes from the estate of Maxie Templeton.
That wraps it up for this edition of Words on a Wire. We'd like to thank our special guest today, Mr. Joshua Rubin. Be sure to follow up with all of his important work that he's doing there with his websites, which he gave to you just a minute ago. Also like to thank our wonderful producer here in the studio, Mr. Sam Cassiano, and of course, our podcast producer, Claudia Flores. You can check us out on Apple Podcast and as well as Spotify. And that's it for me. We'll see you next week, same time, same place, right here on Words on a Wire, KTEP 88.5 FM.
To escape city life, Beethoven liked to ramble through the forest and fields on the outskirts of Vienna. On this week's Chicago Symphony Orchestra broadcast, Bernard Haitink conducts Beethoven's Impressions of Nature, the Pastoral Symphony, plus his Great Fugue. Next time with the CSO, I'm Lisa Simeone.
Come join us this Monday night at 8 p.m. here on 88.5 FM KTEP.
Pianist Orly Shaham here, back guest hosting From the Top this week. And what a beautiful lineup of young people we have in store for you. Like a young violist with such athletic talent, he was drafted to play varsity football in his freshman year. And a highly entertaining teenage percussion duo that performs an arrangement of Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue for two 5-octave marimbas. That's From the Top this week.
Youthful classical players From the Top this Sunday afternoon at 1 on KTEP.